I want to tell you about a little girl called Margaret. She was born in a place called Kufstein in Austria, and she grew up there. One day when she was 6 years old, she asked her father this question. "Daddy, who are those other people? The people who live in houses?"
Her Serene Highness, Princess Grace of Monaco, has generously accepted an invitation from United Nations Radio to relate the story of 39,000 people in Europe today who would like to become people in houses. In the course of Princess Grace's narrative, you will hear some of the 39,000 themselves, recorded by United Nations Radio in Austria, Germany, Italy, Yugoslavia, and Greece. People in houses.
The question Margaret asked of her father touches us, and gently it shocks us too. The plain fact is that we are people in houses, and the bond between us and our home is so natural, so matter of fact, that we do not often express it in words. It goes without saying. It's when you do not have a home that this force within us finds words, the need for a place of one's own. The people we are going to hear about now are people without homes. In other respects, they are much like us. Their hopes and fears are like our own. They are of all ages, of many faiths, and of a variety and profusion of temperaments and vocations. Many of them have shown great courage. Some are weak. All are homeless. Who are these people? They are refugees. They are people who years ago fled from persecution and asked for asylum. They have not yet rebuilt their lives. You'll hear why in a moment. They have not yet found homes. Where, then, do they live? In camps, in places like Kufstein and San Saba, Astin and Gerova and Kolokinto. This is Kolokinto.
Kolokinto, Athens in Greece. This is not a camp as most people imagine a camp to be. Instead of wooden barracks, one huge building, once a tobacco factory. Imagine four halls to shelter 300 people. Listen. The crying of the children, the quarreling of the people, the singing of a woman, the shouting of a man, the playing of a radio. These noises are noises everyone hears in Kolokinto. They are multiplied and echoed by all the walls. I say all the walls, for each of the four halls has many walls. First, the main walls. Then the smaller walls, dividing the space into main units. Then the paper and canvas walls. And then the blanket walls. In these subdivisions, call them rooms if you like, families live, sleep, cook, wash, quarrel, love. Nearly 100 people to one hall. I'm making this recording in the 12 by 6 feet living room of the family Tsakos, and their little daughter, Georgina, is anxious to sing a Christmas song. Come here, Georgina.
Εκκλησία με τα γεσχρόνος, αρχή που βγει.
Yes, though the word means nothing to her yet, Georgina is a refugee. 12 years ago, at the end of the war, there were literally millions of refugees in Europe. People had been shuttled across the map by the gigantic hand of war. Ukrainians in France, Poles in Italy, Latvians in Greece. People clinging to the finger ledge of life and crying out for assistance to a world still dazed by war. They were joined in the early post-war years by many thousands more. By a tremendous international effort, of which many people still know little, millions were given new homes and the opportunity to make good lives. The word DP was driven out of our dictionary. Today, there are just 39,000 left. There are, of course, many more than that number of refugees in European camps. There are some 16,000 Hungarians, for instance. But these 39,000 have been refugees for 5, 8, even 12 years. Their place of refuge are schools and barracks, factories and warehouses and army camps spread out across the face of Europe. Hundreds of them, huts and shacks and armories and storerooms. More than 200 camps in all. Some shelter no more than a dozen people. Others, like Camp Haid in Austria, take 3,000 or more. The refugees are of different faiths and races, varying tongues and ages. But there is one common currency which circulates through all the refugee camps of Europe. The unit values are hope and despair.
I think it's very hard to understand, but I intended to come out, first of all, because I felt that my freedom is lost.
I want to study in Canada.
I wish to study in one Western country.
I hope I shall go to Belgium.
I hoped we will go to the United States of America, because I have there many relatives.
I wanted to go to New County to start a completely new life.
I want to live without being afraid and living, and to get any job, to live like other men lives. But I don't know what will be our future.
Why are they still waiting? Why haven't they gone to new homes and jobs in far-off lands of opportunity? There are many reasons. Countries have regulations about immigrants. Some have age barriers, no over 40s. Others have health barriers, no XTBs. Some have job barriers, only scientists and bricklayers. Some want family groups. Some want only single men or women. As we've told you, millions have passed through the meshes of this sieve and have gone on to build good lives. Millions have gone, but these 39,000 remain.
How old are you?
57.
And what is your profession?
I am a painter.
You are a painter?
Artist.
A painter artist?
Yes.
Did you have to leave all your work behind?
No. I brought some pictures with me. Nothing else.
It must have been terrible to leave all that behind.
Terrible? No. No. I will come gladly. No matter the past, the future is all. That's all.
What are the conditions of working now in the camp? Can you work? Can you paint?
In the camp, not. One must have solitude and calm. That's the most opportunity.
And that are the things you can't get in the camp?
No, no, that's impossible. There are a lot of people and the place is small.
Do you have to share a room?
Yes, yes. We are 10 persons. In one room. Yes.
You are not married, are you?
Yes. And have a small son, but he's now at school.
And your wife is with you?
Yes.
What is your feeling about the future of your son?
He's a child. But his life will be easier than ours, I'm sure. And the world will help him to become a man, a free man. A producing free-thinking man.
Actually, both your wife and you have only this one thought in your mind, the future of your son.
Not only. I hope for myself also a future. Have made my best hopes to produce anything in the short years I have.
Still before you?
Yes.
Perhaps you notice something about that tone of voice, a certain resolution, a determination to make a new life for his wife and his son. That tone of voice argues well for the future of the family. It also brings a glow of encouragement to those who work closely with and for the refugees, the volunteers and counselors and social workers. They are a remarkable band of men and women who give months or years or lives to help. So often, camp counselors find themselves confronted with the arch enemies of progress in this problem: apathy, indifference, inertia.
In how many camps have you actually lived?
Just a second, I have to count them up. In the British zone, in Camp Liechtenstein and in Camp Murdorf. In the American zone, in Camp Aston and in Camp Lakeside. That's four.
And how long have you been in camps?
Since 13th of May 1945.
Have you tried to leave?
You see, after 40, it's very difficult to emigrate, especially if you are not a manual worker.
And your son, is he still here?
He's still here.
Does he continue to live in a camp?
He lives here in the same camp, but in another room.
Is there no way for him to get out of this camp?
It's very hard for single persons, because all you can get is a room somewhere with a family. It's more than you can afford.
Nothing to pin down, some elusive quality, hard to describe. But those who work with refugees identify it at once. It is the symptom of an ailment, a sickness endemic in the camps. Invisible, yet insidious and intractable.
They got so used to staying in the camp, it's quite difficult for them to take a decision.
The sickness is called camp psychosis. Often hard to define, always easy to diagnose.
There are some persons who have been here for years, and they are just not sure whether they want to go to one country or to another country. When a person stays in one place for a couple of years, though bad it might be, he gets attached to that sort of life.
This condition is one of the most tragic yet most subtle of the dozens of heartbreaks involved. It is like narcotic addiction. People have gone through an intensely difficult and painful process of uprooting. Now any particle of security has become too precious to be surrendered, even this much.
I don't know if the people can believe all what we live here, what our life is here. We live in small cabins, one family near the other, and it is never a quietness. And when we come back home in the evening, it's terrible to hear this noise. You cannot sleep in the morning, is the same thing. But in other way, we are happy.
The feeling of lassitude, of giving in, is something which must be resisted by the refugees and those who work with them. As one Austrian volunteer expresses it,
life in a camp is really distressing. And you must have great moral strength to be able to live there and not to lose your hope in the future or in anything. Because if you are living in a big room with 20 other persons coming from various social milieu and having together old people, sick people, babies, young children, young couples, married couples. You can imagine what it's like. I don't know if you can imagine, but maybe I think nobody can imagine what a camp is like if one had never been in a camp.
But perhaps we are getting somewhere near comprehension. We can at least see the problem, the essence. To sustain not only the body but the will. The will is sustained by food of a special kind, hope. Hope based on good possibility. A chance to complete half-finished training, the possibility of a visa to a country of opportunity, a set of tools which make the resumption of a craft possible once again. These things feed the will.
I tried to find work, but it was only casual works which I could do.
What is your profession?
I was studying on the technical university, and I tried to be an engineer, but first of all I have to continue my study.
Are you studying now? Or?
Yes, I'm studying, but I'm not on the university.
Why is it that you haven't succeeded in going?
Because we have been registered and we are waiting, I don't know why, in vain.
Are you in good health?
Yes, now already I'm in good health, I think.
What is your age?
I'm 38.
Isn't it a bit late to continue studying in the engineering?
I don't think it's late. It must be done because I was hindered 12 years long, so I have to start somewhere.
Now, you know the situation in the United States, for instance, where it is quite usual for people to go to university and work at the same time. Would you accept such conditions?
Yes, certainly. I would take any kind of work which probably would help me also in my study.
For instance, if you were given an opportunity to go into engineering...
Engineering, that would be wonderful.
If you were to receive an offer, let's say, from the United Kingdom or from Canada, would you go?
Yes, I would take it, I think.
Again, a determination to make a good life, and that probably means a happy outcome, eventually a closed file, as against this.
I live in Campo 3.5 years up to now. And my son went last year in America. I remained here. I wrote documents to go, but the America was closed and I remained here. And so I am now so sad and I want to help me to go there if you can.
Where does he live, your son?
He went in America, in Detroit.
In Detroit.
And he fall ill there. He is there in hospital. Somebody write me that is homesick, yes.
He is homesick?
Yes, from sad, because he think about us, about his brother, who is in Bulgaria, and his father and mother, and that is, I think, reason that he is fall ill.
What about your wife? How is she taking it?
My wife always crying. I the same cry with my heart. I left one son in Bulgaria. I escaped with this son to save him. And now, for me, he's lost because he is not with me. He is far off me.
A desperately unhappy man, one whose reservoir of hope has been drained to a minimum. But it's well to remember that there are thousands of ex-refugees all over the world, now settled and happy, who at one time felt just as desperate as the man you've just heard. Others take their situation much more philosophically. We would like you to meet a lady who lives in San Saba Camp, Trieste. She is 72 years old, and she has come to a very good understanding with the world around her.
Oh, I must say that I have quite a nice life. I can't complain. I think it's wicked to complain.
This lady's great joy is that she now has a room to herself. How does she pass her days?
I get up rather early because I take my own tea. I make it, I boil it, I cook it, and I drink it. I like taking tea. That's a habit, I believe, which my English teacher gave me. I'm fond of tea. Russians are all, we are all fond of tea, so are the English. Well, I make my own tea. That takes time. And then I don't like to hurry. I like to prepare my lessons. And then, you see, I must walk to the bus and get to the center. Once I'm there, I give my lessons, and I come back at about 5 or 6 o'clock. Then I'm rather tired. I give a lesson 3 times a week to Padre Nilo, who is the camp chaplain. He's very nice. And I give him an English lesson. He's a beginner, naturally. Well, and I read, or I do some mending. That's inevitable, you know, for refugees. And I go to bed rather early. I have to start to scold children who run up and down the corridor. They don't walk now, they run. And they make such a terrible noise that I sometimes can't give a lesson to Padre Nila. And you see, and I have to scold a little sometimes. But I'm naturally calm and quiet. I like reading and painting when I have time to do so. That's how I spend my time. During the summer holidays, I like to go out of town. I like to go to Prosecco, for instance. There's a nice wood there full of mushrooms and flowers and that kind of thing. I love nature.
By and large, the problems of older people have a limited number of solutions. Questions of training and immigration and resettlement seldom arise. Older people must either be reunited with members of their families, or else provision must be made for their lifelong care. But with younger, potentially productive men and women, each day in the camp often seems wasteful and destructive.
Well, our aim is to have our own home again.
Mm-hmm.
That's understandable, isn't it? We left our nice home and we would like to get it again in the free world.
That aim has been realized by millions in the last 10 years. There are people in your country, probably in your town, possibly in your very street, who were, a few short years ago, not to be distinguished from the camp people you have heard on this program. Today, in Philadelphia or Toronto, in Durban or Perth or Auckland, they are your neighbors. Perhaps they speak English with a trace of an accent, but in many cases even that is disappearing.
Our family decided to come to Australia because of reports of conditions here. On arrival here, my brother and I attended boarding school for 2 years to complete our secondary education. After the examinations, I joined a staff of a large insurance company, where I have attained a position of insurance inspector. Socially and culturally, I'm living a full and happy life. All in all, the refugee camps did a splendid service in emergency. But they should always be of a temporary nature, and never a way of life for thousands for years.
Back in the camps, they ask for such simple things, such easy things.
We never lost the hope, but now it is much more harder to fight, you see.
And it is very difficult for them to settle down and accept this, because, you know, they were coming out with a dream that they will all go to America, and that is their dream.
Yes, I wish to study and work.
I wish to go to Canada or to another country because I cannot stay here.
I wish to immigrate immediately from camp.
They're afraid, very much so, of the insecurity that they might encounter outside of the camp.
One of our cases has been here for 7 years. Young family, husband, wife, and a daughter.
You have heard the problem described. You have met a handful of the thousands involved in it. It might seem strange to you that the San Sabas and Colokingtus were not closed years ago. It might seem to you almost unbelievable that a world which has made space for millions of refugees in the past 12 years, which responded so wonderfully to the Hungarian exodus of 1956, should find any difficulty at all with these few remaining thousands. The situation seems equally unbelievable to the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees. Recently, Dr. August Lindt told the United Nations General Assembly that the problem could be solved, and soon, if the resources could be made available to him. He said more. Dr. Lint spoke the words of a vision shared by all who have worked with and for the refugees. That vision is the closing of the refugee camps of Europe. The United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees says that is possible. It can be done, he believes, by 1960. Here is his voice.
39,000 people are today in Europe's camps, waiting for a chance to start a normal life again. About half of them can be immediately re-established if suitable accommodation at a reasonable rent can be found for them. This is not easy. We have been compelled in the past to help finance housing schemes, and we shall have to continue doing that if we are to succeed in our camp closure drive. For some of these people, emigration will be the solution. Many more, I know, would like to go, but existing regulations unfortunately limits opportunities. On the other hand, it is encouraging to realize that some governments are taking a sympathetic attitude, particularly towards those members of families of refugees who have relatives resettled overseas. The most difficult aspect of our program concerns the aged and the physically handicapped people, and those who, for psychological reasons, present problems regarding their resettlement. This affects a considerable number of the refugees. For them, we need rehabilitation and vocational training. For others, we envisage arrangements with old people's homes, the creation of centers for aged and physically handicapped people. We know what needs to be done, but we need the money.
The very word camp brings to mind something temporary, improvised, hastily constructed. It is a place where soldiers sleep in the night, and then in the morning, when they go, the camp goes too. A camp may be a good place to spend a night or two. It is certainly not a good place to spend a lifetime. It is not a home. You remember the question which Margaret asked of her father. Who are those people in houses? There is only one good answer to it, and that answer is not a string of words. It is a deed. Between now and 1960, the United Nations hopes to find an answer for Margaret, a full and satisfactory answer. You have heard, in the words of the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, what needs to be done. There is much that all of us can do to answer Margaret's question, to help the United Nations reach this goal. Our help can be given in many ways. If we cannot help actively, then even our sympathy is important. If you would like to know exactly how you can help, don't hesitate to write to me in Monaco. I will see that your letters go directly to the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees. Goodbye, and thank you.
You have just heard Her Serene Highness, Princess Grace of Monaco, in a program called People in Houses. The actuality material for this broadcast was recorded in Austria, Germany, Italy, and Greece by Stanley Wright, Special Assistant to the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees. People in Houses was written and produced by George Mavshin of United Nations Radio.